You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, good morning. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our phone number. You can email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also check out our website at breadboxmedia.com and our archives at breadboxmedia.podbean.com. You can also become a friend of the show by logging on to breadboxmedia.com, finding friend of the show, scroll to Dr. Michelle, and there you go. All right, so we're approaching Lent, and there are things we want to think about for the whole Lent period of time. We can look at it practically, we can look at it spiritually, but instead of looking at it one way or the other, we'll put it all together. So this is going to be a great time. We have a little bit of time, though, so I want to start easing into the waters before we get into specific things that you can do during that time period. It's a beautiful, rejuvenating time that at one time, if you look at it one way, it looks like a time of deprivation and sorrow and preparation for the resurrection. If you look at it in another way, it's an opportunity to shed old skin. It's an opportunity to shed old habits. It's an opportunity to look and renew a new, let an old part of you die off and a new part of you come to life. So I want to prep a little bit by talking about mental health and spirituality, religion, ritual. They're all very different. Your spirit exists regardless of your religion or if you believe or not believe. It's not going to not exist just because you don't believe or you do believe something. Everybody has, who does believe in something, usually has some kind of ritual, whether it's going down and getting on their surfboard and deciding that God is in the sky and in the nature and in the water. That's still a ritual. And somewhere in there is at least the connection. Other rituals are very formalized. You go to a place, you go to a church, you go to a shrine, or you go to a place of adoration, say the rosary, another ritual. Novenas, a ritual. Lent, every year, a ritual. Something really great about rituals, it's kind of like that dinner bell, you know, it's like pretty darn good that we have things like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because when we're without them, we realize that we starve. We realize that we might be able to forage around in the ground to eat, but the ritual, when there is food around and we have the rituals, there's something that elevates it, something that you look forward to, something that allows you to use up the energy of the meal before and then look forward to and prepare for the meal and also add other things with that meal, fellowship, communion. And even if you're by yourself, still a ritual that can go around the actual beauty of the food and the eating and the praying about it. So ritual is a good thing. We know that also for mental health, ritual can be a good thing. Ritual is a good thing. Ritual in certain mental health issues and mental illnesses becomes a disease and a problem. If you do rituals, you're not going to ritualize yourself into a disease. So don't go there. However, in obsessive compulsive traits and obsessive compulsive disorder, rituals can become a god unto themselves. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I want to make it clear that people who actually suffer from obsessive compulsive disorder oftentimes are aware that this is not functional, but they are driven. There's something biologically connected in such a way they cannot, they must keep going back to that light switch. So it's not that they are putting that as a god. But if you ritualize, if you decide to ritualize into every single thing in your life is down to a ritual, to a specific set of rules, you may be caught up in the rules and not open enough. I'm going to give you an example here in just a bit. So we're separating the idea of mental illness as something you can pray away or that you become dependent on your mental illness. That is not the case. Someone who suffers from mental illness is the same way with your flu. Now, you can take your mental illnesses, you can take your flus, you can take your fibromyalgia and make that part of your identity so strongly that that is who you introduce yourself as. Those are the rituals around which you perform your daily life. That is a little different story. People who are not just persons with this particular affliction, they actually are that affliction. We don't want that either. So this is a great time to start looking at faith, mental illness, how one can complement the other. Oftentimes, if you suffer with a mental illness, and you know, I read an article the other day on the plane, and I apologize because I was going through many, and I don't know the number, but it was an alarming guesstimate, I guess. I want to say there were studies. Yes, there were studies. So when we come out with these numbers, oftentimes it's like, in 2 months or 2 years or 2 decades, we're going to be shown the numbers or something different. But as far as mental illness goes, we're talking about most of the population. Most of our populations everywhere are going to go through some form of mental illness at some point in their lives. Just like you're going to go through some form of a cold, a flu. You meet those people who've never had it. And there are different areas of the globe that are happier, that have less mental illness than other places of the globe. Less depression, less schizophrenia, less just across the board, less mental illness. Just like you'll find places that have, there seems to be a bigger population that multiple sclerosis comes from certain areas more often than others. Certain forms of cancer can show up in certain areas of the globe more often than others. It's not restricted to that. So when we're talking about mental illness, remember, part of what I want to do and part of what I want you to know is that it is a part of life. Mental health and mental illness is a part of life. Somehow, which is understandable because our behavior, our smiles, our tears, our frowns come from a mental state oftentimes. They can be spurred on, as we've said. We're very seamless creatures. Someone with congestive heart failure who's 75 years old can walk around like they're very anxious or they're doom and gloom all the time. That can be from that they're just doom and gloom personalities or culturally from a place in a family where it's all doom and gloom. Or they just get cynical or they get wounded. Can also be from congestive heart failure. You have the same look, the same problems breathing, the same doom and gloom feelings, people waking up in the middle of the night feeling like they're going to die. And they think it's a mental illness and it turns out to be a congestive heart failure. So there's a lot of physical things that that cause the same kind of symptoms. It's a difficult thing to deal with, because you really don't know which comes first, the chicken or the egg. And that's why it's a really good deal to kind of ferret that out a little bit. Check it out. Look at your physical self. Make sure your physical self is fine. And then look at your mental health and take a look at it. Don't make excuses for it. I made excuses for why I probably wasn't that sick a couple weeks ago. had a little bit of a flu. Then I started to get a little bit of a headache. And I thought, oh, yeah, I've got some sinus stuff. I don't usually have that, but no big deal. And sure enough, I don't need to go to the doctor because 9 times out of 10, a lot of what you have is going to be resolved anyway. But it turns out I'm walking around thinking, okay. And the only thing that spurred me is, as I talked about yesterday, my father got sick. So the only thing that kind of spurred me on was like, well, you know, I really need to get out there, but I'm getting worse. So I didn't want to wait it out. And then I had a friend, and again, you know, this timing is so great, who mentioned someone that they knew that had a headache and had a sinus infection and had a flu and didn't go and waited. And they ended up with an abscess and a brain abscess. And they had very dire consequences from that brain abscess. So I thought, all right, just go to the doctor. So I went to the doctor and I had pneumonia. So that is something that I just did not expect. I don't even remember ever having in my lifetime a case of pneumonia. So I may have, I just don't remember it. It's been that infrequent. So the point is that we have to open ourselves up and know that at any point in time, yeah, we can be going down there. We can go to these places that we've never understood before. And it can happen in a snap of a finger. Anything. So I want to keep that in mind. And what I want to do is then link these things together. How does mental health and mental illness affect our spirituality? How does our spirituality affect our mental health? What does faith have to do with it? What does religion have to do with it? And what are some real practical tips that we can do to help not only heal ourselves, but build ourselves up so that we become more resilient as we face things in life? Well, this is a great time to start thinking about that. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. So why are things like Lent good for your mental health? Why are things like rituals good for your mental health? Why? Well, sometimes the why we can read all day long, but it's in the practice, it's in the making, it's in the doing where we find the health. We can read many books on why exercise is really good to ward off or to help cure, in some instances, diabetes. Not your weekend warrior type necessarily, or some particular practice that someone might follow, but just exercise, getting up from your chair, walking outside, going out to the yard, doing a few things, bending over, picking some weeds, walking out around the block even to start. Very, very important. Why is that? We can read about it all the time, but while we're sitting in our chairs reading about it, we're not gaining the benefits of it. Or if we only have, we decided, yes, we will take that first step of a journey of a thousand miles. And so we only stay with the first step. Well, we may not gain the benefit of the next step and the next step and the next step. So our mental health reacts very much the same way. I sometimes rail against the idea of spectrums, but the reality is there is a spectrum of mental illness. Some people are so depressed that they will become suicidal, or they are suicidal, or I've seen people so depressed they stand. They will not eat, they cannot speak, they cannot function, they don't respond. Something has occurred over this deep depression that causes complete shutdown of everything. everything. They don't feel anything. They don't want anything. Also, sometimes their brains change in such a way as they can't filter out. Everything has equal value. There's no perspective. All perspective is lost. But also physiologically, something occurs, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, I do not know. But something occurs where everything, somebody's voice has the same feeling and the same thought and the same reaction as the fan going in the background. And so there is no ability to discern between anything. They will just stand there, and whether it's dangerous or not dangerous, they're incapable of moving. It can be very, very, very dire. So that is a range and a spectrum. Oftentimes we think that if we don't feel good, happy, positive, and are constantly exercising, doing everything, multitasking completely flawlessly, that somehow maybe we're in depression. I think we have to give ourselves a break, and that there are the melancholy people that are a little bit more melancholic. A lot of our composers and artists have been in the past. Many of them haven't. Many are very, very joyful and filled with life. But we are usually both and. Darkness defines light. Sometimes the hard knocks and the depressing things and the sad things. You get depression. Depression is not sadness, but you get depression from things that do shut you down. When you have a death of a loved one, when you have a death of a child, when you have a death of an elderly person, or when you have a physical illness and depression comes, someone with Parkinson's, automatically, not 100%, but it's part of the picture. Depression comes along with that because the brain gets affected. Depression comes along with a stroke. Depression comes along with heart attacks. Something occurs in the body and the brain gets different chemical signals and the brain shuts different things down. Probably in some respects, it may be a protective mechanism, just like a fever is. So that your wants are simple and you're kind of there, just kind of cocooning to heal. But it goes awry oftentimes, just like fevers can go awry. So take this now and collect it, and let's put it out in some kind of a mosaic. We've just collected all our little pieces of our craft we want to put together. We're going to put them out on the table and we're going to create something with them. And what I want to create is a picture for you of one, embracing you are all of you. You are also all of creation. You have stardust in your blood. We know that by science. You breathe in particles and elements of everybody who's gone before you because they breathed in and they breathed out. And it got recycled. It got put into the earth. It got recycled in the rainwater. It's recycled through trees. It's recycled, but it is still, we're there. We're walking the walk, the dust to dust you came, and to dust you will return. We are finite. It reminds us of that. We have a short period of time. And now what happens when you see that short period of time, we have a tendency. Think about how beautiful confession is. Confession and forgiveness is that we have a short period of time, and the short period of time that we have, we spend half of it, or more than half of it, believing somehow. Belief is just too cognitive of a word. Our bodies function in such a way, in our minds and brains, that we are immortal. We're never going to die. We don't have perspectives. We don't see the consequences of our actions. We don't understand significances of how time does march on. And we have all the little cliches that tell us that youth is wasted on the young. And if you see all these quotes, the little platitudes about not wasting time. But those come from people who have already gone through a certain amount of time and realize, as we're marching toward the dust again, we look back and we think, look what I've wasted. But I want to help release you from some of that. We're never going to stop feeling that. We're always going to have that reminder that what could have been, perhaps, again, we go back to creation. What could have been changed. It changed through decisions. It changed through ancestors' decisions. It changed through weather changes. It changed through a lot of things. What could have been is we could have been living harmoniously with dinosaurs, but we're not, because we had changes that happened, and the life had to adapt. Life did adapt. That is part of the beauty. We are adaptable beings. So when the Bible, when self-help, when country songs say, let it go, most of us, myself included, say, yeah, I would love to let it go, but I can't. In my tiredness, in my sadness, in my loneliness, in my age looking backward, how can I let that go? It's a scar. It hurts. True. So what we can do is transform it. Quick story. A soldier, 17 years old, goes off to Vietnam from a farm way back, early 70s. Young, 17, no idea, no internet, barely anything on a television, if they even had a television. Gets transported to another world. Foot soldier on the ground in the army. All kinds of things happened. Terrible, terrible things. He saw, he did. Almost died. And almost died in full awakeness. He sometimes said, this is the date. He would name a date and say, this is the day I died. That was the day he was trapped. And everyone around him died. And he didn't die. He lost a limb, but he didn't die. And he did things he certainly regretted and wasn't proud of. And as he went through life, he reclused, he had terrible nightmares, he was in pain, lots of things happened to him, lots of physical things happened from all the stress hormones. However, as time progressed, and I saw him and I met him after he was quite advanced, but there was something that I discovered after he died, and he died many years after he was told he was going to die. But there was a tree outside, this giant tree outside of his trailer. He lived in a trailer out in the middle of nowhere. And I saw the tree after I went to his funeral. And this tree was a dead cedar tree. Dead cedar tree. And the story behind this dead cedar tree that was rising way up above this trailer, embedded in concrete, is that his friend had all this acreage and used to love going out to this acreage. His friend had this acreage, and one day they're riding around in a four-wheeler and they see this tree, this giant tree, giant cedar. It's all dead. And his friend wanted to cut it down. He goes, no, wait. I've got something I can do with that tree. So he calls out his sons, he calls out some neighbors, and they uproot that tree and they haul it 2 or 3 hours to this soldier's house. I will tell you what happened to that tree, because it can happen to you on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can also email me at DM Live at Sorry, all of a sudden, I started to think about recycling and how I'm going to finish my story, and I completely just went, what am I even talking about? DM Live at BreadboxMedia.com. That is my email address. And you can also log on to BreadboxMedia.podbean.com and catch yesterday's program if you missed it, or anyone that you might find of interest. Probably find a little something about everything on those past archives. So, all right, so I want to talk about many things today. Recycling your hurts, recycling the pain, recycling old wounds, recycling lost limbs, recycling lost opportunities, recycling pain out of death, recycling these things. It's an amazing concept. So let me finish the story, because that's how we're going to kick it off. So this soldier decides, those of you who are just tuning in right now, the soldier decides to take a tree from his friend's long, beautiful expanse of land. 200 something acres. As they're driving around, one soldier happens to spot this tree, a very tall dead cedar. Says, I want that tree. Grabs his sons and his friends, and they get that tree. They fall that tree, and they haul it all the way, about, I don't know, 2 hours away. Haul that tree away to this little tiny town. I was there. Tiny, tiny town. And to the trailer where he lived and where he brought up a family of four in this little trailer. And he had his sons. By that time, he was pretty infirm, so he really couldn't do a lot of physical help himself as far as like helping with it, the hard stuff. He pointed out where he knew exactly where he wanted it. He had them dig a great big hole. He had them lay concrete, and it was like right outside the patio from on this in his yard, basically, next to his trailer. And he had it, there it was, right up so he could see it outside his slider doors. Big, tall cedar, dead. Cedar wasn't going to sprout anything. And one of his sons said, well, what are you doing? Why in the world do you want this dead cedar tree? His wife came out and said, what in the world is happening? There is a dead cedar tree like sticking straight up in my yard. What's going on? He goes, you just wait. So he tells his wife to go and get 50 bags of birdseed. He tells his son to go and get, I don't know, 80 some bird feeders. And when they all came back, he had his sons with their various equipments and ladders, because they had all kinds of things, start hanging bird feeders all over this tree. Very tall tree. Dead tree. Not one green thing on it. So he had all these different bird feeders. Some of them were red. Some of them were green. Some of them were steel. Some of them were sparkled in the sunshine. Some of them were brown. Some of them would look like little houses. And then he said, okay, fill them up with bird seed. So they're all up there filling the bird seed. In a very short order, he said, we'll just wait. So they all went inside. Pretty soon, a bird, another bird, another bird. And he looked at them and he said, new life. I'm bringing this tree back to life. And one of his children told me after his funeral, and I was looking at that tree, he said it lit up like a Christmas tree. Reminds me of the daughter, the dead daughter that Jesus was called to raise from the dead. And he went back to her father and said, she's not dead. She's only sleeping. And that's a spirit that this man, the soldier who had severe mental illness. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a mental illness. And when it's severe, you can become non-functional. Unless you've ever walked in those shoes, it's very hard to understand how someone can be in a company picnic and all of a sudden take up a bat and start swinging because he's no longer there. He's in war. It's hard to imagine. How can that happen? How can he not know that? It's almost as if you got the flu. You can understand that. All of a sudden, you don't know. You ate something bad at the picnic and you go throw up. Someone could say, wow, why did they just go throw up all over, you know, their grandmother's blanket? Because they ate something bad. Because they got sick. Because there was a toxin there. Same happens with mental illness. Something occurred, changes the brain. And you can't always understand it. And when you're from the outside looking in, you can't understand it. So here, this person with severe, severe mental illness who was tortured all his life with it. 30, 35, 40 years of the pain and the agony, never having one night's sleep, vacillating between not wanting to be here but wanting to go on. And yet, toward this period of time, this window of time after he thought he was supposed to be gone because his organs were failing, but he kept going on. He didn't know when he was going to die. And here he just did it one day, driving out. Hey, look at this. I can do something with this. Can you imagine? Well, why can't we do that with us? Why can't we look at the dead in us? The things that we think we've killed off. The creativity we think that, oh, well, we never pursued that. I didn't go to art school. I had a family instead. I can't be an artist. How about if we take those things, or I'm just too fat. There's no way I can get thin again. Or I've just been too hurt. Heard someone the other day. They had a very tragic story, but their tragic story kept them drinking, kept them an alcoholic. Now they're having liver failure. They're very young. You don't understand. Because of all the tragedy I've had, I can't sleep and I need this to sleep and I need this for this and I need this for that. And I will not go to rehab. I can't go to rehab. Rehab doesn't work for me. Well, that happens. The world is littered with people like that. And we all can get there. You are not immune. That's the other thing. You're not immune. So don't let it... I know when we experience these things, we get scared, like, oh my gosh, what's happening? It's our 100% at the time. But with a little bit of faith, with a little bit of opening, I always call it an opening because it's not exactly like you can think it. You can begin to be tipped off by listening to this and then you start thinking it. Well, hey, let me examine this a little bit. Think about it. But it begins with action. You have to be on the move. And so as you're walking or as you're sitting and you're feeling and you're not feeling well, if you take a 2 minutes, open the window, even if it's cold outside and still kind of nasty out, take a moment to breathe. If nothing else, the icy air, close the window back up again and say, thank you for this breath. Thank you for the seasons. I don't like them. I'm freezing cold right now, but thank you for the seasons because I know that soon I will see spring. Though you're repurposing, you're recycling. So you can recycle your tragedy. You can recycle your lost limb. You can recycle what was taken from you. What was taken from him? We look at him and say, well, he did these things. And maybe it was part of war, but he did these things. He was 17. And as he gave, wanting to give, some things were taken away. His innocence, his base for reality. In his world, up to that point, there was no such thing as torture. He never saw anyone tortured, never saw anyone killed. He never saw anyone blown up. He never saw body parts. Can you imagine? difficult to even imagine. We see it in movies and we freak out. And sometimes they last with us for a long time. But we also know we're sitting in a theater or in our own homes looking on Netflix, eating chips or popcorn. But someone is actually living that. It's retelling the story. And somehow we're removed from that. But we have our own things. We have our own tragedies. And they hurt. And they hurt when you bring them back up again. It hurt. But you can recycle that. You can recycle that into a depth that someone else can't have. He saw that potential in that tree weeks before it actually anyone else could see it. They were laughing at him. What do you mean this day you're going to dig up this tree and we're going to haul it to our yard? It's as big as our trailer. How are we going to do this? But he recycled the dead and he brought it to life. And we can do that in ourselves too. When we return, we're going to see what the Book of Joel has to say about that. We're also going to maybe get a couple of little practical tips. Get your coffee, get your water, look out the window, say thank you, God, for the bird that just flew by, and I will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. We're talking about recycling hurts, recycling anger, recycling just all of our bad habits and our hang-ups and our tragedies and our traumas, and it's not easy to do. You know, somebody sent me a picture recently of themselves in their youth with a girlfriend. He's a young man. Well, young to me, but he was much younger when he sent with this picture. And he sends me this picture, and his statement was, "Whatever happened to this boy?" And because I know this person, the meaning behind it was, you know, here I am. A disaster. What happened to this person? And there was a lot of melancholy and tragedy and tragicness and victimization in this, in his statement. And he had very terrible things happen to him in his lifetime. And at first, my first inclination was to say, what happened to this face, this person you're showing me? This face of innocence happens to everybody. And then I stopped myself because in some respects I was giving an invitation to compare wounds and compare losses and compare battle scars and have that be the focus. Well, you earn these things, and you know, it's more as you age, you collect scars and you collect tragedies and you learn from them. But I realized that was a little limiting, or something in me said, no, let's look at it from a different point of view. It's an old orange or sphere I tell you about that my son had when he was five, with his little flashlight showing about how you can see the different places of it depending on where you shine the light. Brilliant little five-year-old statement there, straight from God. And that's really true. It's really true. So I looked at it more along the lines and tried to invite, instead of inviting the, yes, you know, look, this thing of beauty ends up this thing of disaster. And here you are with, you know, organs failing and all kinds of tragedies and all kinds of problems. And that's true. But let's look at the focus somewhere else on that little beautiful sphere. And the beautiful sphere is that, much like this tree, that there's beauty to be found, there's beauty inside. And the more that you go on, and the more that life does what it does, because all life will collect its scars, its wrinkles, its gray hairs. I don't care if it's my sweet little Mozart or if it's a bird, a hummingbird, it's going to collect the reality of living on this planet, like just like a rose will do it. It's going to happen. And the joy and the hope that you had as a child perhaps isn't what it is now. That's kind of the nature of life. You hear it from ancient times. There's never a time where they go, goody, 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 I'm old, yay, and I'm hurting and I can't walk anymore. There's a transition there. It's you just don't hear that. People are ready to go sometimes. Sometimes people aren't. But what we need to look at, or what I chose to look at instead for this particular individual, and then I'm thinking, yeah, I got to look at that for myself too, is that we look and we see this as the road to transformation. We're always transforming. We're always shedding skin. We're always shedding our hair. We're always collecting things. But each time we collect these scars and these experiences in life, they don't kill us if we're breathing. We're only sleeping. We can let them cause us to go to sleep and to get mired down in them. And we often do for a time. Everything has a season. So when you have a season to grieve, you have a season to, if you're depressed, you have a season to experience what the depression it feels like. Or if you do have tuberculosis or dengue fever, like a beautiful young girl that I know, my daughter-in-law's cousin travels the world. She got dengue fever. She had to be in the hospital in some foreign country for quite some time. And now she's out having fun again. We go through what we go through. We know what it is. We can recycle that to increase the color, the rainbow that we have inside of us, the tapestry that we are. Not so that we can go, oh, let's stay away from that country, but that we understand it. Or if we come across someone who has it, we can recognize the symptoms and say, hey, maybe you better go somewhere. You know, maybe you better get checked out. Or they can be more compassionate because they know what it feels like, because it's hard to look from the outside in. So when the soldier recycled this tree, he brought life to deadness. He made that tree live again, not as it looked like before. It wasn't a little shoot. It wasn't a little with little green sapling. It didn't have little beautiful leaves that smelled fragrant, that housed all kinds of animals and bears and birds and spiders and whatever houses in leafy trees. It didn't bring sap that fell down. But what it did is it was able to take things that people made, birdhouses, and things that people cultivated, bird seed, and people had to make bags to put them in. So that's the bird seed bag, and stores to house them in, and trucks to go get them in, and big arms and muscles to go carry them in, and ladders and ingenuity and working together on a project and fun and laughing and wondering, what the heck are you doing? And hey, I know what I'm doing. All this brought, look at all this life that came into it, not just the finished product. Not just the finished product. Look at this. A lot of life had to come into it. Somebody somewhere had to make the picture of the bird, had to draw the picture of the bird that's on the bird seed feeder or on the bird seed bag. All this stuff had to happen. Somebody had to make the t-shirts that people were wearing when they were, or the coats when they were putting everything up, and they were laughing, and someone else had to make the tea and the coffee and the hot chocolate or the soup or the barbecue that they ate that day. And they all had to sit in there telling stories or doing whatever they did, as they're still thinking, you know, really, now we have this big dead thing sitting in our backyard in concrete with nothing, like all this stuff, all this money spent for what? pretty soon life, that's what. Life. Joy. Not only the life that the tree got, but the joy that it gave to others that you never expected. Sitting around laughing. Stories to tell. I'm telling you the story now. Birds have come and gone. Sitting at a window looking at the bird. So many things came out of that one thing. So let's look at this. Let me say, like I told you, I'd say something from Joel, the book of Joel. Let me find it again because it's very beautiful. It says, this is in the book of Joel. It is in, let's see. I just happened to open to it, so I've never really read the book of Joel, to be honest with you. It's chapter 2, I think it's verse 12, maybe. So it says, but now, it is Yahweh who speaks. Come back to me with all your heart, fasting, weeping, mourning. Let your hearts be broken, not your garments torn. Turn to Yahweh, your God, again. For he is all tenderness and compassion, slow to anger, rich in graciousness, and ready to relent. Who knows if he will not turn again, will not relent, will not leave a blessing as he passes, oblation and libation for Yahweh your God. Sound the trumpet in Zion, order a fast, proclaim a solemn assembly, call the people together, summon the community, assemble the elders, gather the children, even the infants. Let the bridegroom live his bedroom and the bride her alcove. Between vestibule and altar, let the priest and ministers of Yahweh lament. Let them say, spare your people, Yahweh. Do not make your heritage a thing of shame, a byword for the nations. Why should it be said among the nations, where is their God? Then Yahweh, jealous on behalf of his land, took pity on his people, and he spoke, now I will send you corn and wine and oil until you have enough. Never again shall I make you a thing of shame for the nations. I will drive the invader from the north far away from you and drive him into an arid desert land. His vanguard to the eastern sea, his rear guard to the western sea. He will give off a stench, give off a foul stink, for he has done great things. O soil, do not be afraid. Be glad and rejoice, for Yahweh has done great things. Beasts of the field, do not be afraid. The pastures on the heath are green again, and trees bear fruit. Vine and fig yield abundantly. Sons of Zion, be glad. Rejoice in God, Yahweh your God, for he has given you the autumn rain, since he is just and has poured the rains down upon you. So here is something from the book of Joel that is so beautiful because it talks about, yes, your hearts will be broken. Let your hearts be broken, but not your garments torn, because there is recycling of the desolation that you see in front of you, of the no-win situations, of those that you think that are out to get harm you, that may be out to harm you. People, like I told you yesterday, kicked my dad out of where he lived when he's 92. These are the things that we can take and become reborn again, have new life on those parts of us that we thought were once dead. Well, I am Dr. Michelle. We're going to continue on this all the way up to Lent. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.